You're listening to The Writer's Voice on Virginia Voice, and I'm your host, Jennifer Robbins. Today we have in the studio Bill Kaffenberger, musician, freelance, actor, writer, and co-author of The Lost Years of Bela Lugosi, No Traveler Returns. Thank you for being here, Bill.
You're very welcome.
The book is The Lost Years of Bela Lugosi, No Traveler Returns, by Gary D. Rhodes and Bill Kaffenberger. As many may know, Bela Lugosi is best known for his 1931 portrayal of Dracula, and one of his greatest performances was in Murders in the Rue Morgue in 1932. So this book is really about the lost years from 1945 to 1951 of one of the great actors of his time. Isn't that right, Bill?
That's correct. Basically, what you have here is Bela Lugosi was a classically trained actor born in Hungary. He decided to become an actor at a young age. He was involved in what would be the equivalent of our national touring companies that would do Broadway shows. Well, they would do the classics of Ibsen and Shakespeare and travel throughout different regions in Hungary. So he was classically trained. He ended up being a member of the National Theater in Budapest, Hungary. And his favorite role there was actually as Romeo in Romeo and Juliet. And at one point in his early career, he actually played Jesus Christ in a passion play. Now, due to the communist influence and revolution, he had to flee Hungary in 1919. He ended up in Germany for a short time doing German silent films. Of course, came to America in the early 20s, became famous as Dracula in the Broadway play, and then was highly regarded for his role in the film version in 1931. So how we get to the lost years, in the 30s, horror films were considered a legitimate film art form, and they had A budgets. Most of the film studios would spend the same type of money on a horror film as they would on something like Edward G. Robinson, a gangster film, or a Greta Garbo film. Then, after the late 30s and the war comes along, World War II, there was a great hunger for quick entertainment. So the B picture came to ascendancy in Hollywood. These were the lesser budgeted films, and they would use familiar stars, but there wouldn't be as much put into the quality of the script or the storyline. So Lugosi essentially became typecast in the 40s in this type of horror film. He had a lot of work. He did a lot of films. He did a lot of stage work. He had a revival of Dracula. He did a national tour of Arsenic and Old Lace. But come to 1945, the war is over, the soldiers come home, they're getting back to their lives, raising their families. Maybe there's not as much disposable income at that time. The Hollywood scene was changing because of the threat of television. Hollywood was moving to more big budget pictures with the most popular stars. So the demands for Lugosi's type of film that he did during the war kind of dried up.
Okay.
So here he was in this period between 1945 and 1951 when he took the Dracula play to England to try to revive it. People during this time, people felt, well, he's just, you know, he's not doing anything. He's indigent. That's been the historical portrayal of him by various biographers, that he would do the occasional show, but he really wasn't doing much.
But that's really not the case book.
That's not the case. That's why we call it We Found the Lost Years. Basically, my co-author and I, using a lot of online digital newspaper resources, we have discovered that during this period of time, it was probably Bela's most busy time in his American career. He was doing personal appearances. He was crisscrossing the country doing Arsenic and Old Lace and Dracula in summer theater every summer. He was doing early television, radio. He was doing was known in the old days as the spook show. And the spook show was the kind of thing where you would bring a popular Hollywood star or a popular horror film, and along with that a magician who would do a kind of horror-themed magic for about an hour, which would end with a big blackout and various fluorescent spooks flying around in the theater. Lugosi even had one of those that he toured in for a while.
And I think he was even in a show here with that, with the Spook Show in Richmond. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? Yes. Interestingly, unfortunately, we didn't find this out until after the book was published. But the last known American appearance of Bela Lugosi on stage before he went to England was at the National Theater down on Broad Street. And he brought his horror and magic stage show to Richmond.
That's
and
great.
And if I could read just a little bit
yes.
from the article here. It said, Bela Lugosi, Hollywood's Mr. Horror, will be at the National in person Wednesday night with a special horror and magic show designed to curdle the blood of the toughest patrons, according to Bob, manager of the theater. And it goes on to talk a little about his film appearances. And then it goes on to say, now with 60 pictures to his credit, Lugosi is on tour, having assembled a 13-scene show with a sizable cast. Some of the weird characters who will accompany Lugosi include Dr. Montez, a maker of magic, Igor the Monster, who will engage in a death struggle with Lugosi, the vampire maidens, who are said to be well-versed in voodoo, plus an assorted lot of goblins, ghosts, and ghouls. Lugosi's show will be climaxed not with the usual spectacle of a girl sawed through the middle, but with something he calls the bloody guillotine. He also has one girl who he regularly burns alive.
Oh, wow.
So they had two shows, one at 7:30 and one at 9:45 p.m., and after each show they showed one of his films. And that would have been typical of his Spook Show tour, late 50s, early 51, in the New York City area. And then he came south a little bit, did some shows in some other cities, including Richmond.
So I would have loved to have seen a show like that in Richmond back in the day. I'm sure it was just fabulous to see a show like that. Most people like something spooky. I know I do. I want to read something from your book that I thought was interesting.
Okay.
This was during one of his times when he was traveling, heading east to do some of his sideshows. His eyes, the eyes, they were piercing. Robert Ray, Bob Edgington said, but as we got to talking, the real piercing look fades into a warm, friendly smile. Tell us about this amazing encounter with the man best known as Dracula.
One thing about Bela Lugosi that made him very much different from a lot of his Hollywood contemporaries is he really loved his fans and he really loved people. Probably this comes from his growing up in a rather middle-class family in Hungary. His father was a baker, and when the bakery eventually did well, he became a member of the local bank. So he went from baker to banker, but it was a middle-class family, and I don't think Lugosi ever forgot his upbringing, so he was always happy to talk to his fans. He and his wife and son were traveling east in the summer of 1949 to do summer stock. And regularly with the summer stock, he would alternate between arsenic and old lace and Dracula. So he happened to stop the hottest day of the summer in the little town of Cairo, Ohio. And here's the young mayor, 25, maybe 28 years old, sitting on his porch. His kids are out in the yard playing ball. And here's this car stops. And the wife and the son go in to get some food at the restaurant, but Mr. Lugosi is standing by the car, just, you know, wiping his brow, very hot. He starts playing ball with the kids, and I actually met and interviewed Mr. Edgington, who's now 93 years old, and he remembers this day just like it was yesterday. And he was so impressed that Lugosi wanted to know about him and his life and his family. He was not the stuck-up Hollywood type, you know, he even gave autographs to the townspeople before he left. And I remember Bob saying that he was just so impressed that Lugosi treated him like they'd been friends for 20 years. And he wasn't interested in talking about Hollywood. He wanted to know about Bob. He wanted to know about his family. And
he was just a regular guy, really.
Yep,
he wasn't
absolutely.
Really, you know, a spooky person.
No, he was the exact opposite of his screen portrayal, which just tells me that he was a much better actor than people realize and than Hollywood gave him credit for. Just very good, very good actor and a good personality as well.
Lugosi was portrayed as the spooky villain most of his career, but his wife Lillian described him as a really sweet guy. So that's really interesting that he was just really a sweet man. And
to give you an example, I came across this one article written by I forget the guy's name, but he was a very popular columnist in the New York papers back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And he had been a fan of Lugosi since he was a kid and saw Dracula. Well, he and his wife were having lunch or dinner one day in one of the more popular restaurants in New York City, and in walks Lugosi. He had never met him before. So Lugosi happened to come by where they were, saw this guy's wife, just does the continental gentleman thing and just takes her hand. "You are lovely, my dear." Gives her the kiss on the hand. "Said, it is so wonderful to see you and your husband."
That's great.
And that's the kind of guy he was, just this very, very sweet, continental, European, old-style, old-world gentleman. He treated everybody that way. Now, he wasn't perfect. He had his faults. He was a bit of a womanizer, which was you know, one of the issues between him and his wife. He kind of got read the riot act and got his act together a little bit on that.
So he had a little bit of a dark side, maybe.
Yes, oh yes. And unfortunately, in the mid-40s, he started suffering very much from a sciatic nerve problem due to an injury that he got in World War I.
Okay.
And it was preventing him from working. So they went to his doctor, and the doctor rather unscrupulously recommended morphine, so which was not a good thing. So he was taking this medically prescribed morphine on occasion to kill the pain so he could work. But the older he got, the more frequent that got. When he and his wife divorced in the early 50s and she took custody of their son, that kind of devastated him. So he fell into the drugs kind of as a self-medication thing, both, physically and mentally. So he, there are rumors around that people have written, well, was addicted for 30 years, 40 years, 20 years. Well, it's really not true. It was a medical prescription. He didn't truly become addicted until the early 50s, and rather heroically for the time, he actually turned himself in 1955 to obtain a cure at one of the facilities in California, and that was unheard of for an actor or actress
really?
To publicly come out and do something like that. And he did a 3-month program, and he was cured of his drug addiction.
Well, that's good news.
So there, he did have a dark side, but it was not in the way he treated people. Of course, it was just a very kind person. I met his son and his granddaughter a year ago when I was out in California, and they were every bit as nice as I imagined Lugosi was, so I guess it rubbed off on his progeny as well.
That's great. You're listening to The Writer's Voice on Virginia Voice. I'm your host, Jennifer Robbins, and today we have Bill Kaffenberger, who is the co-author of The Lost Years of Bela Lugosi, No Traveler Returns. So let me ask you this. How did Lugosi, in your opinion, stack up or compare to some of the other big names during the 30s and 40s, like Boris Karloff and Lon Chaney?
Interesting question. Now, there was Lon Chaney Sr. and Lon Chaney Jr. It's hard to compare him to Sr. Chaney because Sr. Chaney was primarily a silent film actor who relied on a lot of makeup and pantomime and not so much dialogue. Chaney Jr., he was more of what I would call just more of a pedestrian, average kind of actor. He really was used more for his name than his talent. He's one of those kind of actors that he occasionally would do a good job, but usually it was just kind of average. So in comparison to Chaney Jr., I would say Lugosi, with theatrical training in the classics like Shakespeare and so forth, was a much, much better actor and had a much bigger personality than Chaney Jr. Now, comparing to Boris Karloff, I would say Karloff was probably the better actor strictly in technical terms. But Karloff relied more on makeup for a lot of his characterizations. Of course, with the Frankenstein monster, which was his big moment in his career. Generally, Lugosi was more of what you would call a technician, where he would work more from the outside in rather than from the inside out.
What do you mean by that?
Lugosi relied a lot on gestures, vocal inflections. Like, to give you an example, listen to them, the children of the night, what music they make. So you see, it's the way that he says the dialogue.
Right.
And but he was capable of doing some fine, you know, straight acting that was the other way around. But he was more used his personality in his acting to become the character. Karloff, on the other hand, would let the character mold the personality that he wanted to get across. So, if that makes any sense. So, Karloff was always a different character. So was Lugosi, but it was still Lugosi. And it may have been the accent. It's kind of hard to tell, but it's... They were both very fine actors, but it's just a difference in approach, I would say, between the two. Lugosi was perfectly capable of doing comedy. I mean, he did a film with W.C. Fields. He did a film with Joey Brown, who was a famous comedian of the 30s and 40s. He did a straight role in a film called Ninotchka with Greta Garbo. So he was certainly capable of holding his own with some of the big names in comedy and drama in the 30s. But he just never was given those opportunities because he was always, I'm always the monster, but I make a living, you know.
So he was really typecast as the monster.
Yes.
It was hard to get away from that.
Even after Dracula, that was the case. But in the 30s, the budgets were bigger. It was not so much churning out. We got to churn out 100 films a year, you know, and a lot of them are going to be these low budget things. Unlike the 40s, when the war was going on and people needed stuff to take their mind off the war, so like they were constantly bringing these films out. So he was a very good actor. He just never got the chance.
I know the writing process had to be very interesting because your co-author, Gary Rhodes, is from Ireland. Isn't that right?
Yes, Gary was born, he's an American citizen. He was born and raised in Oklahoma. He was a film buff from the time that he was like a teenager, so he kind of turned that into somewhat of a career. He's a professor of film history. He met a lady from Ireland and married her, and they ended up moving back to Ireland, and he currently works for Queen's College in Belfast. So I've known Gary probably about 25 years. And we have always been in contact. I used to write articles for one of his Bela Lugosi fan magazines years ago. It wasn't a moneymaker. It was more for the fun. And we kept in touch over the years. And we had both been doing this research online about Lugosi's career as, in recent times, more and more newspapers are being digitized. So basically what they do is they will take the microfilm and they will run it through this process called optical recognition, and it actually be the equivalent of a PDF file. So they take these pictures of these things, and the optical recognition makes it easier to do the research because you type a term in, and it will give you back all the newspaper articles or anywhere where that term or that name is mentioned. So it's made research a lot easier. There's still a lot of good old dusty newspaper morgue type of research that you have to do, but a lot of the research was made easier. So we were both looking and finding new things and didn't know that each other was finding these things until we talked one day, and he said, let's write some magazine articles together. And then he says, no, there's too much, let's write a book. What we did is I took what I had after we had decided, let's kind of divide it up into these 10 chapters. Well, eventually it became like, 19, 20 chapters and 350 pages.
Sure.
We originally only intended to have 10 chapters and maybe 150 pages. So I wrote the original draft. I sent it to him. He added what he had that I didn't have. And then we just went back and forth via email And then when the time came to work with the person that did the layout, the photographic and illustration layout, we did the same thing. We would do this thing where he and I would make suggestions to the guy, and he would send the product back, and we'd look at it and go back and forth. And then finally it went to the publisher, and the publisher is Bear Manor Media, B-E-A-R-M-A-N-O-R, Media. And anybody interested in the book, you can Google that online, and the published page will come up. And just for those that are listening, the publisher does want us to do an audiobook. I'm hoping that I can get to that this year or next, but there's not one available now, but we hope there will be one in the near future. But that's how the writing process went. And if we ran into roadblocks, he would call me or I would call him, and generally we would have 3 or 4 hour conversations about every other week, kind of getting our strategy together and so forth. And it was really a very easy way of doing a book. I can't imagine if I had tried to write this myself.
Really?
I mean, could have done it.
Sure.
But it would not have been as good, because he has strengths that I don't have.
Right.
I've got strengths that he doesn't have. To give you one example, he had tried getting information out of the Billy Rose Theater Library, division of the New York Public Library, and they've got a massive theater and film division up there. Anything that went on in New York in the area of theater, television, legitimate stage, summer stock, they've got oodles and oodles of files. Well, he and another friend of his had given up trying to get anything from them because they weren't being responsive. So I said, well, let me give it a try. So I knew that Lugosi had worked with these three different agents from the late 20s on up to the early 50s, and I knew that the papers for these agents were resident there at the Billy Rose Library. So I just said a little prayer. I said, Lord, help me with this. Called him up. The guy said, oh, we'll pull those files for you. He pulled them, called me back, went through all the files with me over the phone. And then what was great about it is there were original letters between the agents and Lugosi, some with Lugosi's signature. So we got copies of all of that, and we were able to get permission to use many of those in the book, and none of which had ever been published before in any of the books or magazine articles about him. So we had many of those types of scoops in there. So where Gary couldn't find something, I could, and vice versa. So
it was a process that just worked for you.
It worked, and we hope to follow up with some magazine articles and some other. We've got some future things in our sites, which I really can't go into right now,
well,
but there may be more from us.
I'm sure the fans of Bela Lugosi will love to see another book. Is there one thing that fascinated you the most about Lugosi that inspired you to pen a book about him?
That's a good question. I would say the desire to get out to the film world, people that are interested in books about film in general, and Lugosi fans in particular, the fact that he was very busy during this period, and what a heck of a nice guy he was. And that here was a guy that he didn't care that he had to do vaudeville, spook shows, TV, radio. I mean, he cared, but it didn't stop him from getting money to feed his family. And that he was very resolute in going out and working as hard as he had to make sure there was food on the table and that he had some kind of a career going.
Right, so he just really loved his craft, so he was just
yep.
really willing to do just about anything to,
yes.
like you said, to put food on the table for his
yep.
family.
I just thought that was very admirable and something that needed to get out there, because none of the biographies on him prior to our book really go into that at all. It's like a footnote. So we have taken the footnote and made it into a 350-page history of this is what really went on during those years.
Well, let me ask you, Bill, do you want to read maybe one excerpt from your book that you feel you'd like, you know, the audience to hear, or one particular thing you'd like to say?
I think I'd like to read the thing about Bob Edgington. It's just a couple of paragraphs.
Okay, that sounds good.
That.
Let's listen to that.
I'm going to read a little bit about Bob Edgington, the mayor of Cairo, Ohio, and how he had the experience of Dracula playing ball with his kids.
So okay, take it away.
Excerpt from the book, picking it up from where you quoted. It was right around noon when people started going into the restaurant to eat. Oh, yeah, the weather was hot. I'll tell you, I was sitting on the porch with my two kids. My older daughter was 4 and my little boy was 2. A car stopped in front of my home. A man got out, walked around to the sidewalk. A lady and a child were in there also. I looked at him as he stood up on the sidewalk. I thought, do I know him? He looks familiar. How can you know him? He just pulled up. And I said, my land, I'm dreaming here. This just could not be who I thought it looked like. And I said, it can't be. It was only about 30 feet from my front porch to the sidewalk. And my little son and daughter were playing ball, tossing the little ball back in the yard. And he just stood there and watched from the sidewalk. I said, it's warm. He smiled. Yes, it is. I felt like I was meeting a friend. I told him, I said, are you who I think? He interrupted me. He said, yes, I am him. I'll never forget that. I said, well, come on up here and sit on the porch. And he said, you don't mind? I said, heavens no. Come on up here. We come up and we got chairs out there and we sat down. And he had a big hanky and he wiped his forehead. I said, you want a drink of ice water? He said, I'd appreciate that very much. I got him a big glass of ice water and we sat there and talked. It was about the weather, just general information. He asked me about the town and the size and the people, this kind of stuff. As the little kids were playing ball when he came up on the porch, he picked up the ball and tossed it back and forth to the kids for a little bit. He talked to me for a while. Some people started coming up. His wife, she never actually came up, but she went to the restaurant out of the car. She kind of waved because we were sitting on the porch. She could see us, and it was 35, 40 minutes. She came back. She kind of waved. She got back in the car. People started collecting around, you know, just one or two, then three or four. And he just came out in the yard, and he was talking, and he said, well, I'm going to have to go. I said, why? He said, the crowd is coming. So far, there were only about 10 or 12 people there. And so he said, you have a nice little town here. Thank you, Bob. He called me by my first name, and I was thrilled to pieces. He said, you've been very pleasant. I enjoyed our visit. I really enjoyed our visit. Looks like I must leave. You have a nice family. He shook my hand, placed his hand on my shoulder, and it's been swell. He gave me his autograph and smiled. I won't forget how nice you treated me, Bob.
Wow, that was great. So he really was a great guy.
Yes, he was.
Well, tell us again, Bill, where we can find your book.
Well, it's published by Bear Manor Media. That's B-E-A-R-M-A-N-O-R, second word media, M-E-D-I-A. All you really have to do is Google that or have someone Google it for you. That will bring the publisher's page up, and you just look down the page till you find the book, No Traveler Returns, The Lost Years of Bela Lugosi. And as I said, we are going to try to get an audiobook out at some point in the future, but right now it's just a print version.
Okay, and do you have like a Facebook page or Twitter account or social media stuff?
Yes, if people want to see a little bit more about me and what I do, they can just look up William Kaffenberger, Kaffenberger, on Facebook, and that will tell you everything you want to know and maybe a lot you don't want to know.
Thank you, Bill. The book is The Lost Years of Bela Lugosi, No Traveler Returns by Gary D. Rhodes and Bill Kaffenberger. Thanks so much for being here, Bill. We really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, my dear. I see you later this evening.
Thank you so much. Goodbye, everybody.